to make a little more sense, just then, you know, we lost one of the greatest journalists ever in American history, at least in my humble opinion. So
we actually had the person who helped work on that piece with Bo Bergdahl, Matt Farwell, who said, though, on the issue of the FBI investigating that that Michael was so concerned about, in fact, that they were. They were investigating, right, Michael, for his piece on Bo Bergdahl, even though, in a very rare move, the FBI said they weren't conducting an investigation after Hastings' death.
Well, and Matt Farwell is a wonderful friend and collaborator, and I'm so happy that he and Michael were able to work together on that story, which wouldn't have happened without Matt, Michael always said. Such a well-researched story. It really is just an example of the Obama administration's crackdown on journalism. Michael and Matt were able to find out more information about what actually happened and Bo's motivations than the U.S. government. And that apparently is scary and threatening and causes us to investigate Michael Hastings and Matt Farwell, which I really don't understand.
Let's go back to Michael. He was on Democracy Now! In 2012. He said the Afghan war, like the invasion of Iraq, was based on a false premise.
If WMDs were the big lie of the Iraq war, the safe haven myth is the big lie of the Afghan war. And what I mean by that, and this was true in Iraq as well, but 99% of the people, maybe even higher, honestly, the people were fighting, whether it was Sunni insurgents in Iraq or Shiite militias in Iraq or in Afghanistan, the Taliban never actually posed a threat to the United States homeland. So the question one has to ask oneself is that if everything we're doing and everyone we're fighting is not actually a threat to the United States, certainly not a direct threat by any means. Then why are we expending so many resources, $120 billion a year, with all the lives lost to do it? And again, this is the big lie of counterinsurgency, which I know we've discussed on your show. To justify this tremendous outlay of resources, they have to say, "Oh, well, no, we're killing terrorists," but everybody knows that that's not true.
Michael Hastings, in 2012, talking about the Iraq and as well as Afghan war, he reported from Iraq as well as Afghanistan. Elise Jordan, this again, the anniversary of his death. You had written a letter to the New York Times objecting to their obituary of your husband, of Michael.
Yes, it was factually inaccurate. It was shameful. I can't believe the New York Times is reported erroneously on my husband's reporting. Basically, every time they decide to write anything about his reporting, but I really didn't think that they would go that low in someone's obituary.
What
and it was just
wrong?
Tasteless. They cited the Pentagon report that cleared McChrystal and his aides of any
For radio
wrongdoing.
Listeners, you put little air quotes around
yeah.
cleared.
Because the Pentagon, Michael did not participate in the investigation. He didn't believe that the role of the reporter was to turn over your notebooks to the government. But of course, the Pentagon is going to clear. It's all, and if you actually read the report, it's pure speculation. Oh, well, we don't remember exactly. We don't, it's so vague, and that's what upset me. You can't, if you print a paragraph about a report, the journalist should actually read the report and then have some context and decide, oh, well, maybe this report doesn't actually clear McChrystal and AIDS. So
they did this in life and they did this in death.
Yes. I think Michael's reporting was really threatening to the establishment. And I think that's what he really gets out in this book. When he was talking about what he called the lies of counterinsurgency, what he wanted to do with this book was to talk about how the lies are aided along by the news media and the complicity of so many journalists and so many status quo journalists in promoting this.
Michael Hastings' book, The Last Magazine, is out today. Elise Jordan, thanks so much for being with us. I'm Amy Goodman with Aaron Mate. Our website, democracynow.org.
This is Donna with your WUSB Concert Billboard for Wednesday, June 18th. Rattlesnake Dawn will be at the Dublin Deck in Patchogue, 6 p.m. Rudy Perrone will be at the Pentimento Restaurant in Stony Brook. Gideon Luke and the People will be at the Brooklyn Bowl at 8. The Gene Casey Trio will be at the Stephen Talkhouse in Amagansett. Ringo Starr and his all-star band will be at the Beacon Theater, Manhattan, 8 p.m. Willie Nile will be at the Highline Ballroom, Manhattan. Glenn David Andrews with special guest Henry Butler will be at the Rockwood Music Hall, Stage 2, 9:30. On your concert billboard for Thursday, June 19th, Dandy Wellington and his band will be at the Front Row Stage at South Street Seaport, beginning at 6. New Life Crisis will be at the Dublin Deck in Patchogue. Lords of Lankenstein and He-Bird, She-Bird will be at the Cinema Arts Center in Huntington Village, 7:30. Kenny Wayne Shepherd and Robert Randolph and the Family Band will be at the Paramount in Huntington Village. City Winery welcomes Buster Poindexter at 8. Lucinda Williams with special guest Kenneth Bryan Band will be at Space in Westbury. Tommy Keys will be at Treme Blues and Jazz Bar in Islip, 8 p.m. The Revere will be at Mulcahy's in Wantagh at 9. The Hoodoo Loungers will be at the Stephen Dockhouse in Amagansett, 10 p.m.
Listen to WUSB in the morning. On Mondays, Workhorse Radio. Tuesdays, Jim Dexter. Wednesday, Cafe Ali or Blues at Dawn. Thursday, Fishing with Bill or An Eclectic Mess. And Friday, whatever floats your boat. That's all our sunrise shows, weekdays, on WUSB, Stony Brook.
That's right, and it is 6:02 in the p.m. on a Tuesday evening right here on WUSB Stony Brook, and that can only mean one thing.
In the back of a bus, kind of...
tape, too, if you want to...
I'm sorry?
I have tape if you want to secure that so it doesn't make noise.
I don't think it's making that much noise, but I won't know for sure until that bus pulls away.
Sure, I've got some pink tape that will look really good.
You got pink tape stuck to you, in fact, but on your elbow there. But I don't know if that's going to really... I think if I hold it like this, you won't hear anything.
It'll be pinker if I...
Where were you planning on... Okay, the bus is leaving.
Here. Now you've given me control of the interview. That was your fatal mistake.
Okay.
Is that okay?
I think so. Yeah, yeah. As usual, you sound a little better, but...
Oh, you're sweet.
No, I'm bitter, actually, because you always sound better, and...
Bitter can be better.
No, it's not, though. Not in this case. All right, well, we're here. We made it. Oh, gosh, where are we now, Kyle? This is another city, isn't it?
It's been quite a bit of travel.
It has, and we've been awfully remiss in not recording in the various places we've been. And why is that? We just have gotten so caught up in travel and running around and I guess just not really recording everywhere we can. So right now, you want to tell the folks where we are? While I sip some of this beer.
We're in the United Kingdom. A place we've been before, actually, about a year ago. And,
Sorry, that was really good.
We're actually still traveling to our destination, which, in this case, is Liverpool.
Well, wait, what makes that our destination? I mean, this could be our destination. London was a destination. Everything is a temporary destination.
Right.
And, of course, back home is the ultimate destination until we travel again.
Right.
Well, I can see we're just raring to get back into this. Well, Liverpool is the next destination, I guess, after this. We're actually sitting outside a train station right now.
Well, I'll add that we just came from Paris, and before that we were in Rome.
Yeah, and before that we were in Munich. And before that we were in Luxembourg. I believe that was the last place we recorded from was Luxembourg, correct?
Yeah.
All right. So
it's been a while. We've been to a bunch of places, but we've done some other like recording and basically exploring and relaxing a little bit.
Everything that has happened since Luxembourg has not been recorded yet. We have not talked about it. So we have to remember all of the things that happened in that period of time, which I think is, what period of time was that? Is that a week, 2 weeks? I'm not really sure.
Right.
We ought to be logging this. Okay, well, I remember we were in Luxembourg, and we were walking over big bridges and things like that, and I know we did some recording from, where did we do recording from? That's right, we were at the hotel room leaning out a window.
Yeah.
I think someone said shut up to us.
Yeah, at the very end, a woman said, shut up.
Well, she might have been saying shut up to somebody else, but, you know, why would she be saying that to us without anything beforehand, and in English, on top of everything else? Well, probably because we were speaking English for a good long time.
Because it was early, I guess, or midday, and she didn't want to wake up, so she told us to shut up.
Okay, whatever, but the point is, the day before, when we were trying to sleep, there was some guy talking long and loud. Was that in French he was talking?
I'm not sure.
Well, it was long and loud, and it was annoying, and we put up with it. So I think we get to do that as well.
Especially when we get to bring back information stories from where we've been.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So we went from Luxembourg to München, or Munich, as we call it.
Yeah, that was interesting, getting to a large city like that. There's like a lot of police at the station, and very German atmosphere, change of pace.
I'm trying to remember arriving at the station. We arrived at Munich, and the rule we always have, we always book a place to stay very close to the station, because we're carrying a lot of things. We're carrying video equipment, audio equipment, and these damn calendars, because we had some leftover calendars from the Ulm conference.
Yes.
And we're trying to give them to hackerspaces and things like that. We actually found a hackerspace in Germany, in Munich.
Yeah, we did.
You found it.
Yeah, it was awesome. We were like totally trying to navigate and like go to the front door, and we ended up asking this woman, who ended up being a resident of the hackerspace. They had like hackers in residence and whatnot. So she actually brought us around the side, and we found the entrance to MUCCC.
Well, okay. Yeah, you cut to the chase very quickly there, but to set the scene, we had walked over there. We took the U-Bahn, which every German city seems to have.
Right.
Their subway. We took it to a certain stop. We were actually looking for a store that sold Club Mate, because we're curious, you know, how prevalent is this German drink that we happen to import. We were walking around, and you had the address for a CCC chapter, and it was really kind of funny, and this is something I don't know if I mentioned before, but I have this problem in Europe. I'm always bumping into people. People always seem to want to be exactly where it is that I happen to be standing. If I cut around the corner, someone needs to be there just at that moment. If I go to a door, that door opens, or somebody comes out, or somebody comes in right at that instant. And it's just frustrating and annoying to me, and kind of funny too. So we were standing on the street for a while trying to figure out where we were. You were looking at your BlackBerry. Your BlackBerry has been very helpful, by the way, by telling us where we are and what we're doing wrong and how it could be better. But in that particular case, we were standing on a street and we knew we were close. We knew it was one of the doors. I don't think there are any numbers on them. So we went to this one door. And, of course, as soon as I walked up to that door, all these people had to get into that building. And then once they were gone, all these people were getting out of the building. And it just kept going on. No other place on the entire block anybody had any interest in being, just that one particular door. So after a while, I just sort of threw my hands up in despair. But there was this one woman that you happened to notice and start talking to. And yes, that was the woman that just so happened to know all about the place we were looking for.
Yeah, I couldn't get any signal. I was trying to use GPS and like a software on my phone and use all this, but it ended up being that like analog chance moment of like just stopping someone in their day. She's actually really kind, like offering us to come in if we were trying to access the building, because we were sort of staying out front wondering, okay, what is in, you know, there's, what is this about? There's no indication this space is here. It ended up being on the side of the building where I think the street number was totally different. And in fact, they told us later if we were coming back, we should come in the back door through the alley or the back part. It was so cool, like just being brought in like that. And
we hung out for a while. We talked to them. We had a nice chat. I think the first question we were asked was if we were from the NSA.
Yeah, do we have our NSA IDs?
Oh boy.
Which, yeah, okay, that's funny guy. Okay.
Well, Germans are kind of like, look, is that a city bike? Barclays.
That's a Barclay bike.
Barclay bikes in London. We've noticed almost in every city we've been in that they have the equivalent of city bikes. Luxembourg had them.
Yes.
Paris had them, but Paris had absolutely no mention of any company or anything on them. But it was obviously the same type of system. And now here in London, I just saw a Barclays bike for the first time.
Yeah, they're really everywhere in a lot of the cities that that we've traveled to. And people are using all modes of transportation to get around in the city.
Seems that way. Seems that way. But let's go back to Munich. We were in the hackerspace for a brief moment, and we had some conversations with people there about the Ulm conference, about Club Mate, the CCC, the NSA, various other things. I don't think we ever told them that we were from 2600, though. We just sort of were these wandering hackers that decided to drop in. They were about to have a meeting, because in Germany they're always having meetings, and we said we'd come back afterwards, but we were really, really tired. We get really tired walking around all day long. We had done our laundry that day in Munich. We had just explored. We went to this beach by a, what was that, a lake or something?
Yeah, it's a river.
It was a river. People were sunning themselves by a river in Munich. It was really nice.
Having little picnics.
And we were only there for just over a day. And the reason for that was because we had to leave the next day to take a train to Rome. We wanted to take an overnight train to Rome, but we weren't able to because that was sold out. So we had to take a daytime train to Rome, which meant we had to cut our visit to Munich short.
Right.
So we never made it back to the CCC hackerspace, and we regret that. We want to go back, and of course, the people had no idea we were from 2600, so we can't even say we're sorry here, because they won't... Well, maybe they will find out about it and then realize who we were. But I don't know. What were your impressions of... look, another Barclays bike. Amazing.
Wow.
What were your impressions of the hackerspace, CCC, Munich, Germany, anything?
Well, as with anything on these kind of trips, you have to like coordinate all of the resources and logistics for normal stuff. It's not like you live there, so you have to balance your time and rest as well, because just commuting and figuring out the train system, everything can be a bit exhausting. And we had other travel arrangements to make, but it was great to be able to stop by. And I liked seeing their space. They had a lot of stuff, I think, going on in the back. They were doing like some kind of administrative meeting that day, and very, very much welcoming, but no like organized events were really going on that we were going to attend necessarily. But they sort of informally were like, yeah, you know, come back later. We were just having this meeting, and we were able to talk to them a little bit about soda, as you said, and I got one of my first sodas in Germany since the camp from their vending machine, which was kind of cool. And they had all kinds of little electronics hacked user interfaces for different things. And it was neat. It was fun to hang out for a little bit. And I took some photos out front and some video, and sort of we just logged a little bit of that adventure.
Yeah, and like it's typical with Germany, they have like on a marquee outside the name of the hackerspace. It's like an official type of office space.
Yeah, it was a retail space, and they actually had those tubs that they had at CCC Congress a couple years ago with the RGB LEDs in them in the window.
You know, you mentioned that to me, and I wasn't familiar with them. Maybe you could describe them a little bit more for the benefit of the listeners?
Yeah, they're in the lounge at CCC Congress back when it used to be at the BCC.
In Berlin.
In Berlin, and they basically are...
Sorry, we're recording a radio show.
They're basically Tupperware...
just had somebody come up asking for money.
Yeah.
But you know what? They walk away when they see we're recording a radio show.
Well, that's respect. I mean, they know we're busy.
A tip. In London, if you have a microphone on a tripod on a table, people walking up asking for money will keep walking because they don't want to interrupt.
Or be recorded.
Yeah. Handy tip there. So go back to the tubs in Munich.
Well, there are these, like, storage bins, maybe 20-gallon or something. They're a translucent color of plastic with lids, and basically they did a whole matrix of them and built a wall in the lounge at CCC Congress a couple years ago, and a couple of them left over were stacked up in the window, and as we were filming out front, they turned them on and had a couple patterns going. That was kind of neat to see. But they had all kinds of stuff like that, and this like cool lighting and stuff in the ceiling and other installations there. As I said, the vending machine.
They're
it was
so
cool.
Artistic, those Germans. They really are. Yeah, they make things look beautiful.
Yeah, they even had like a digital computer that was like hacked and had a LCD screen in the front of it. And I don't even know if the actual computer part was there. Maybe they were just running other computers with it. But it was neat. It was really neat to just be able to drop in and not be, well, trying to track people down or, you know, sending out appeals. We just sort of sought it out, mainly over the soda, but we did want to meet and greet people. And
well, we discovered the soda was being sold at a place across the street from where they are, and it all seemed to make sense then.
Yeah.
Although we did find it in other places in other parts of town as well, so that was kind of cool.
Yeah, and when we got in there, it was a weekend, so it was very hard to, I mean, there's not a lot open at the station or in the area.
Yeah.
I don't know, we poked around a little bit in that, in Munich, like you said, the river, we checked that out, and also just got familiar with the metro, which they were taking apart at one point. I mean, we tried to get in to the entrance to one of the stops at
yeah.
Munich station. They were like taking it apart, and we couldn't get down to the station on that particular section because just at that very time we saw them taking down the main sign.
Yeah, at that very moment they removed the sign that said Metro as we were trying to walk down into it. So that gave you a sense as to how our luck was going.
Yeah, it was just crazy. But we explored a little bit, had some meals, and just took care of ourselves a bit. Went for a stroll on the river during sunset and got some cool video of a clock tower or a church tower with some bells ringing, and just basically saw this. It was really interesting, the park and the river, because people were picnicking and doing things on the banks of the river, but they also were jogging a lot through the park.
Yeah.
And doing other kinds of like calisthenic or aerobic activity.
I regret you mentioned the clock tower. There was a clock tower near where, wow, I'm sorry, we're at this pub in London, and the buses just keep coming by. It's just as busy as you can imagine it.
Across from a train station.
Yeah, Euston train station. We'll get into that in a moment. But basically, in Munich, we stayed in this place that was near a clock tower. Now, unlike Amsterdam, fortunately, this clock tower knew to turn itself off after midnight. I think after like 10 o'clock it didn't chime anymore, so if you were trying to fall asleep you didn't have to worry about, you know, falling asleep before the clock chimed again. But in this particular case, the way it chimed was something rather unique, and I wish I had recorded it. It would chime, okay, I'm trying to remember how it did it. It would chime on the hour four times. Like it would go ding, 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 and then it would go dong, a different bell, for every hour. So if it was, say, 8 o'clock at night, you'd hear four little bells and then eight big bells. And then, at a quarter after, you would hear one little bell. Now, did you hear? Yeah, I think you would hear the eight bells again. Or was that someplace else that did that?
No, quarter after, you would hear a tone, then at half past you'd hear two tones, then quarter till you'd hear
three,
and then top of the hour you hear four plus many for the hour.
For the hour. But okay, you know, it's Vatican City. That's where they were going bell crazy, and they were just playing the hour after, at the quarter hour, at the half hour, 45 minutes. It was a whole system there. I never did figure out Vatican City. But yeah, you know, different places do it differently. And remember in Liechtenstein that time we went there, and they for some reason they rang bells twice. It was like one for one group, one for another group. I don't know. Little things like that. You try to remember. Anything else about Munich or Germany in general? Any cool stuff with people or food or transportation or buildings?
I don't know. We went to, I found Arabian food? Is that politically correct?
Yeah, that's
incorrect.
Well, it was, was Lebanese. I think it was Lebanese. Is that how they built it?
He didn't expressly say it. The guy was really cool, and he was apparently a wrestler or some kind of athlete.
Well, okay, you saw this. First of all, the reason we found out about this place, we were staying in a hotel/hostel. I booked this in a hotel, but when we got there, it said it was a hostel, so I'm not quite sure. I think maybe half the people were there in a hostel-type setting, and some were there in a hotel-type setting. Whatever it was cheap, it was good, it was a cool place near the train station.
But
that's always
menus.
The best thing. I'm sorry?
But they had menus.
Yeah, they had menus that somebody had dropped off, so we figured, okay, you know what, it's late at night, and that's the thing. When we got to Munich, I was very comfortable in Munich, because unlike Luxembourg, things were open late at night.
Yeah, Luxembourg had no, like...
You just had this feeling that you missed it, you know, when you were there, you missed it because you got there after 9 o'clock, you missed it because you're there on Sunday, you missed it because you're there on Saturday. It doesn't matter, there's always a reason why you missed it, or maybe nothing happened at all. But in Munich... Things were going on after midnight, after 11, after 10, you know?
A little, yeah.
Enough for us to actually go and get real food. So they left this... Wow, he's going fast. That was a police car here in London. Someone had left a whole stack of menus at the hostel desk or the hotel desk or however you want to call it. And... We followed directions to that place. Directions that, by the way, were not very clear because we wound up walking all the way around the train station instead of through the train station, which would have gotten us there a lot quicker. But it was okay because, well, we saw all sorts of interesting sights, different kinds of people and, you know, things that you should do when you're in a city. Late at night, maybe some people would find it a little bit scary, but it's the kind of thing that when you're from New York and Kyle, and you're just naturally... comfortable in cities and with people, it's the stuff you live for, and we just walked around for a while.
Yeah, we've gotten pretty good at our landings and places. Mm-hmm. And I think we just sort of know how to navigate, how to carry yourself. And I was just excited to go to a place that was obviously local, that people were going to from where we were staying, and also just be able to check things out in a bit of a larger, more like active city than what they have in Luxembourg. We got by in Luxembourg, but it was tricky. I mean, it was a lot, you know, like flying by your wits, and a lot of things were closing right up as soon as we approached. So
yes,
it just wasn't ideal for really coming in late, and we keep kind of strange hours anyway. So
we do. We wound up getting like baguettes in various places. I think we went to some fast food place late at night the first time that was open, and they had baguettes. We were trying to get a beer at some Russian bar that we found, and we got scolded there, so we knew it was a Russian bar.
Right.
And then we found food, went back to the bar to get something else.
Yeah.
We're good. Thank you. Someone else almost interrupted us. So the microphone, you know, microphones really do help.
Yes.
They get you in trouble sometimes, but they also save your ass sometimes.
I think the pink tape is helping.
Okay, you know what? If you want the pink tape to take credit for this, you got this pink tape wrapped around the microphone to...
Well, it makes the tripod stand out, and I honestly think it just gives it that professional touch. I mean, hot pink is serious.
It is serious. It's a lot more serious today than it used to be. It's basically checking out a city, whether it be Luxembourg, which is a city, by the way, and a country, or Munich. Different rules, different levels of liveliness. You just have to adjust. You have to figure it out somehow. You know, we got our baguettes, and then we got something the next day, too. We had sandwiches the next day, which was also on baguettes. I was getting a little sick of baguettes.
It was an interesting distinction in Luxembourg. Like, the train station was the most active part.
Yeah.
A lot of, I guess, the discussion we had with an owner of an Indian restaurant,
uh-huh,
was about how people leave, and also the expectations of his clientele being one of the richest cities in the EU. A lot of people are out of town in August in Luxembourg, so that led to compounded the quietness that we were feeling of that city, but also... he indicated something that was sort of interesting, that he really has to do an outstanding job it's almost akin to like what you have in New York City with the grading of the restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
He does. He has to do as much. I think it's Smiley Face Plus.
Smiley Face Plus is what he had as
that's
a rating.
That's akin to like an A and an A rating for a restaurant in New York. And I thought that was kind of interesting. But he basically said that the standards are so high and they're always checking that because of the clientele, because it's major financial and investment holding companies and stuff. So they just naturally, if they're going to survive, they have to cater to those kinds of clients. Uh-huh. But most of them were out of town when we were there.
Yes, yes. Well, now you found this Indian place. First of all, there was an Indian place. We stayed in a super cheap hotel. There was an Indian place down the block. In fact, it's kind of cool because when we had the baguette in the daytime, we went to this sandwich shop in the touristy section. This is where they dress up in medieval garb and like have all kinds of like little displays and things like that. All the tourists come and take pictures. And, you know, we went and we talked to the woman running the sandwich shop, and we asked her, like, so what's there to do in Luxembourg? Where's the fun? And she was like, she was very sweet. She was basically saying, well, you know, this area here is kind of like fantasy land.
Yeah.
You know, we knew it was like fantasy land. This is ridiculous. It's not what what a city is all about. And she said, you know, the place that you really, where you might find reality is by the train station. Of course, that's exactly where we were staying.
Well, look at that. It's like punk guy and a cop giving directions.
Wait.
Look at this. This guy with, like, platform shoes talking to a cop.
Who was giving directions to whom?
The cop was helping him understand his directions.
Well, that's good. I guess
very
that's all
goth,
right.
Very goth. Very, I don't know.
It's London.
Is he wearing garters?
The cop? Is the cop wearing garters?
No. The this guy. Oh, well, I'm not going to judge. He looks very fashionable.
The place we were staying happened to be the most real place. And it was. You know, we walked in there late at night, like 10 o'clock. And it just felt a little gritty, you know, a little like, okay, you just got to keep your wits about you. But I was just picturing, you know, us getting mugged. And I would be saying at the time, am I really getting mugged in Luxembourg? You know, who gets mugged in Luxembourg? Probably would have gotten us in a lot more trouble, but still, it's like, you don't expect that to happen. And it didn't happen, obviously, and it's just basically, you know, keeping my alert levels up and saying, okay, I gotta, like, you know, watch out for people, because you always do that, especially when you're from New York.
All that notwithstanding, like, you basically... you gotta kind of laugh a little bit, because if you're a good traveler, if you're, you know, attentive and just sort of minding your business and, you know, getting from where you want to go or where you're coming from to where you want to go and all that, you're pretty well safe. And it's funny that, like, what we read online and on the internet was basically saying the train station, that vicinity was like the most dodgy, and we were like, more or less comfortable being able to walk around. Train station is really beautiful in Luxembourg.
Yes.
City.
Yes.
Very small, but a lot of old stuff. They do a lot of renovating, I think, there. A lot of very old structures. Hopefully the bridges, too, connecting various parts.
Oh, my God, those bridges.
Yeah.
If you're ever in Luxembourg, there are a few bridges. When you go over them, they're just so incredibly, ridiculously, unnecessarily high off the ground. And it's just, you know... I don't even know how to describe them. It's almost like you're in the clouds. That's how high it is.
Yeah.
And you don't get the sense you're in the mountains, so I don't quite know how that works.
Yeah.
But in any event, okay, so we were in the train station area. That's where we were staying, and there was an Indian place down the block, and we were thinking, you know, we hadn't had Indian food in a while, and we had just been in Amsterdam, and the food there really isn't very hot, so we were kind of craving that. And you found a better place that was a little bit in a different direction. And we basically were wandering around looking for that, and we eventually found it. And we didn't have reservations. They asked if you had reservations, and we didn't. And then the person who greeted us at the door went back and then got the owner. Apparently, maybe they thought that we were trying to sell them something, because the owner came up to us looking rather stern, and we had to repeat that we didn't have reservations, and it was like, oh, well, then sit down. You know, and we basically told him where we were from, And I said, you know, I can tolerate hot food, which he didn't believe at first.
At all.
And we just had this really, really good rapport develop because we were travelers, and he was somebody who was different in an interesting city, an interesting environment, somebody who had been there for a number of years. And as we do in many places, we just closed it out. You know, we stayed till they were finished for the night. They gave us complimentary drinks, and it was really cool. It was really a pleasant experience. I love doing things like that, where we just sort of bump into random people and have incredible conversations, and especially people who are running a business, because it's really hard to do that kind of a thing.
Yeah, and in Munich, it was a lot bigger than that city in Luxembourg City, equally as clean. It felt a little bit more rebuilt, like it had been through more recently. Wasn't preserved as well. The renovations were more like new building and stuff, and just bigger and German and all that. But we enjoyed an interesting meal there at the Arabian place, or Lebanese.
The place said the first night.
Yeah,
it was. I think it was Lebanese. It was definitely Arabic in nature.
But we were also looking for some spicy food because we had gotten so much kind of I don't know, traditional meat and potatoes kind of fare.
Well, that wasn't spicy, was it? I don't think.
No,
it
wasn't. But it was very interesting. They had no alcohol served there.
No.
Because of their religious beliefs, I'm sure. And yeah, that was cool because the owner had all these photos on the wall, like memorabilia and stuff.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. But yeah, it took such a sidetrack. We mentioned that a long time ago, that he was a wrestler or something. And yeah, so tell us about that. You saw,
I don't know. They really took care of us. I mean, it's similar experiences. It's basically like, you know, these simple things you have to do when you're traveling, hopping from place to place. You don't have a kitchen. You can't just go to the grocery store and whip up something different every night. Mm-hmm. Because you're moving around, so you have to kind of find some meals. And we like to find good places, interesting
yes.
places, different stuff.
We also like to buy snacks and have them around. And you whip up some pretty interesting concoctions.
Yeah, we had some good snacks recently.
Yeah.
Anyway, in this case, we're still on kind of like a spicy kick. We wanted to get some good, like, spicy food. So we went to this place that basically we just sat on the corner in Munich, from these crazy directions that were terribly difficult to navigate. But we basically sat there and had all kinds of stuff with, like, yogurt and, I don't know, some kebabs, kind of grilled
yeah.
stuff. And just it was just nice, and had a little tea. And anyway, I asked the guy what he was doing. I thought he was a boxer.
Well, you saw pictures up on the wall of somebody who was a boxer, but then you said, that's our waiter. Our waiter had basically the same face. Oh, no, the first thing you said was that our waiter was a boxer just based on his face, on his ears or something like that. There was something about him that made him look like a boxer to you.
Yeah, he looked like he was very built, had like a pretty tough upper body, and also his ears were a bit like kind of changed in shape because I think...
They got... beat upon quite
it happens when you wrestle. I don't know, it's like,
oh, no, we didn't know he was a wrestler. We thought he was a boxer at that point.
It was a boxing kind of wrestling thing. I don't know, it's just something different, that tissue gets kind of inflamed or something,
right.
I don't know what it is. You can probably look it up.
Well,
but
then
anyway,
we asked him afterwards.
He said specifically that he was wrestling, and that his brother and him had trained, and basically these days he was teaching more, and I thought that was really cool.
It was from Iran. That's right, it was a Persian place, it wasn't a Lebanese place. Wow,
Persian,
how could I
I'm saying
lump the
Arabian.
Two together like that?
I don't
such
even know
racist.
What the hell I'm talking about. We're terrible.
They're not Arabs in Iran. They're not Lebanese either.
What are they?
They're Persian.
Persian.
Yeah.
Persian.
Very different.
God damn.
Extremely different.
All right, we have
but he
a,
was a
lot
boxer.
To learn.
He was a boxer. No, he wasn't a boxer. He was a... Oh my God, I'm racist there too. As a wrestler. Different. Very different. A wrestler for Iran. The country of Iran. And I think he was saying something about... being in the Olympics or something, or maybe I was saying that. He said something about being in the Bundesliga, which is football, but maybe he was talking about how those kind of athletes get money and
yes.
people who wrestle don't.
Yeah, there's no money. That's what he was saying. And
is that guy walking down the street with a glass of wine?
Yes.
You can do that in London?
Apparently.
Is he part of the bar? Or is he just walking down the street with a glass of wine? Where's he going now?
Standing on the corner with a glass of wine.
Is he if he crosses the street, that means he's not part of this establishment.
No, he's on the corner.
Okay, in London, it's kind of cool.
He just took a sip and he's using his iPhone.
Watch, if you go to London, just note this. The bars, you can stand outside with your drinks. And you can even cross the street as long as you're within sight of the bar and you can hold your drink there. But you have to come back with the glass. And a lot of people wearing suits and ties do that, especially on Fridays.
You don't want to stand in the pub and make a phone call.
No.
Walk outside.
It's cool you can do that. You know, little things like that matter. And it's stuff that in America we just sort of get bent out of shape about.
Yes.
All right, so Munich. Anything else to report from Munich?
We're looking for the Perseid meteor shower, but I didn't see any of it.
No, we didn't see that, did we? I remember looking at the sky. We were looking for satellites or something. We didn't see satellites, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of light pollution, but we didn't catch that either.
We did see satellites at home at the hacker camp we went
to. Yeah, we were looking for ISS.
Yeah, and we saw it. Well, we weren't looking for it the first time. We just saw it. It was there, like 4 in the morning.
Right.
And then we were looking for it the next night because then we looked it up and we let the whole camp know that it was going to pass over. We didn't see anything in Munich. But then from Munich, we went on to Rome.
Italy.
Right? Italy, yes.
And we went through Austria, which I've never been inside that country. But on the train ride, we spent fair amount of time in Austria, just for a little bit. So, yeah, we traveled up the mountains and into Austria, which was interesting. I enjoyed that ride, took some pictures.
Well, I'd like to spend more time in Austria because that is an interesting country, too.
Oh, I'd love to. It looked interesting, but we did not stop, regretfully. And it's just from the inside of a train. So next time we'll definitely get out and stay a bit longer and check it out.
We wound up taking the train to a city in Italy. I forget the name of the city. Ronza, something like that. We waited for another train, and that one went straight to Rome. It was actually a Eurostar. Yes, Italy has a class of train known as Eurostar. It's not the same Eurostar that
Verona.
Verona, that's it. Yes. Good memory. We took a Eurostar from Verona to Rome.
Yes.
And that was, and again, it's not the same Eurostar.
Italian Eurostar.
Italian Eurostar.
And it was very, very quick.
Uh-huh.
It went 298 kilometers an hour.
This is a Royal Mail truck next to us right now. This is actually, it's like a postal.
See, it has AdBlue additive and then diesel. That's like a urea ammonia additive that allows the emissions to be cleaner and basically results in a byproduct of water.
AdBlue additive, it says. But most importantly, it has a crown on it because this mail is Royal Mail.
Yes.
I guess all mail in England is Royal Mail.
Yes.
What makes it so special? It's just mail like any other mail. But whatever. Okay, fine.
It's a clean burning truck. I'm not coughing.
No.
It's loud.
It's right behind the double-decker bus 168, which is passing down Houston Road here, I believe, is what we're on. Or maybe it's not. No, this is Evershult Street. That's what it is.
Lots of people on bicycles.
A lot of people on bicycles. A lot of those...
You did say it was rush hour, right?
Well, it was rush hour when we started a while ago. And now it's probably still rush hour. I got to say, we arrived here. We'll get to when we arrived here in a bit. We arrived here, it was the peak of rush hour, and we wanted to get from St. Pancras Station to Euston Station. And there's so many train stations here. King's Cross and St. Pancras are in the same basic area, but then, I don't know, maybe a mile down the road is Euston Station. And we were going to take the underground to get there until we realized it was rush hour and... the tickets were £4.50 each, which is, about $8 a piece. And I just wasn't in the mood. I don't want to be a cheapskate, but I wasn't in the mood for us to be spending nearly $20 just to go one subway ride, one stop on the subway. I don't know, and you just paid a huge amount for these beers. It's like London has lost its mind as far as expenses. Maybe people are getting paid a lot of money here, but it seems like things cost double. It's almost like Scandinavia.
Yeah. Or Rome.
Not Rome. Rome was cheap.
Yeah, no, I'm kidding. But I really enjoyed the time in Italy. When we went from Verona to Rome, we were on this high-speed train. It was very, very fast. And we settled in. We stayed at a place near the station again in the district.
Well, this was cool because we stayed at a place that I had stayed at once before.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't know the name of the place. I forgot the name of the place. I had to somehow log in to my email from in Munich when we had no Wi-Fi. We found connections somewhere. And I logged in, and I had to figure out when I was in Rome last. And I did that by looking at the summations for Off the Hook and Off the Wall. And then once I did that, I went to my email, and I basically searched for that particular date and then looked for hotel bookings, and I found the name of the place. And then I looked up the place and tried to book something there, and for whatever reason I just could not do it. It wasn't working. It was driving me insane. And that's when you stepped in, and you managed to somehow, because you compared the address, you were able to figure out that changed its name to something completely different.
Yes.
And that's how we were able to stay in that place. And that place was awesome because A, it was really cheap, B, it was right next to the train station, and C, it was across the street from the most amazing restaurant that I had gone to before. And that's, of course, the first thing we did when we got there is we dumped our bags in the room and we just went right across the street and we ate like kings, and it didn't cost very much at all.
Yeah, it was really nice to have homemade pasta and stuff to contrast some of the other dishes we'd had. Got a bit of a spicy fix, but I mean, Italy's got this amazing love affair with food, and we totally soaked that up and got right into the atmosphere there. Speaking of which, it was very hot. The climate was very warm, and the next couple days we just basically walked around and explored this really, really old city, and got to know it and understand how to get around. And there's a lot of tourists in Italy and
God,
Rome.
Oh, God, a lot of tourists.
And there's other things that are quirky. A lot of the people there, just as I had indicated about Luxembourg, they tend to go on vacation in August and leave.
Yes, we noticed a lot of places that we wanted to go to were closed because people were just gone and they just shut down their shops. You know, things you wouldn't see in America. Basically, everything has to be open all the time. But both in Rome and in Paris, you notice that in August, people just kind of, you know, put the shutters up and go someplace else, and it's okay.
And you couldn't entirely blame them because it's so darn hot. They probably go to Siberia or something.
It's also interesting. You know, we went to this hotel, and it's, you know, pretty minimal, although beautiful, though. High ceilings, shutters on the windows that open right out onto the street.
Everything there feels very old. Very
and solid. Really, yeah. Solid. We were asked, okay, if you want to use air conditioning, it's an extra €5 a day. You know, not really that much, but I get into this mode sometimes where I want to make sure I don't spend things I don't have to spend. And so we were kind of asking ourselves, okay, you know, let's decide if we really need air conditioning. And it was hot. Ordinarily, we would have needed it. But we just sort of got into a mode where we just dealt with the heat. And it worked. It was fine. We didn't really need air conditioning. We kept it off. We kept the windows open. We walked around outside in the heat. It was, and to give you an idea, it was about 34 Celsius, which I think is in the mid-90s. You know, you have to drink water, you have to hydrate, and you have to pace yourself. But we're not into complaining. We're into adapting. And
yeah.
I think Rome, we really did that.
Yeah, it was a interesting experience, kind of adjusting your body to the climate and getting sort of a last hurrah of the summer. It was very trying at times. As you said, we had to hydrate a lot and really not get too crazy when we were out during the day.
Well, how would we hydrate? What's a typical thing that we would do? We'd walk around, we'd see a ruin, say, oh, that's too bad, it's all ruined. Let's go on to the next thing, but let's first stop. We would have a coffee, perhaps, maybe a little sandwich or something.
It's interesting. They have spigots everywhere in town in Rome, and you can get water from these spigots.
Well, they're running. They're constantly running.
Every bit of it is all running water. Very interesting. I didn't actually drink out of any of them, but they have public drinking spigots that you can approach, and it's nice to kind of get your hands wet and, you know, wash your face a bit and get sort of refreshed.
Yeah, I splashed around in a couple. I didn't drink from them myself, but you really need that, you know, when you're walking around and it's so hot. You got to have water. We'd stop occasionally for a couple of beers, which I know isn't the best thing to hydrate yourself with, but it was very refreshing. Or I'd even get a soda, which, you know, I don't often drink that, but...
The sugar is good for you.
It's better when there's actual sugar and not corn syrup, which they have there.
Yeah, yeah. And you got to keep your blood going and mind your health in that kind of climate. We also got sunscreen, because...
Yes.
You really got to take care of your skin. It's your eyes and your skin can be really damaged by UV and UVB, and so we made a point to get some protection on that regard. But if you get those things down, you're pretty comfortable. And we tried some different places, touristy places, different places, and, but it had more of that incredible Italian food and just atmosphere, the whole thing.
It's really hard to get a bad meal in Rome. You can do it if you try. There are fast food outlets, but... And I don't know why people go there. There are lines getting into those places. But just going to the most simple place or something in the middle of the tourist area, it's still really, really good.
Yeah.
And not too expensive. And just, it's an interesting time. You almost always have an interesting conversation with somebody. And, yeah, it's just a lot of fun.
We went to Vatican City, and this is something we've talked about on the video project, but... We got very lost going into Vatican City.
Oh God!
We wanted to check that place out on one of our outings during the day, and there was a stop we got off on, and then we wanted to walk across Vatican City to get back on the train on the other stop, and it was a heck of a time. But basically, we walked along the water, and then. Walked up into what looked like a hospital. It was really bizarre. It was all these corridors and hallways and up walking through a parking garage, and it was just completely lost. Well, ended up basically looking like a bus terminal.
Okay, let's back up a little bit. We basically walked up a hill, and as you say, we were in a parking garage. It was a parking garage, no question about it. But in the parking garage, we saw signs for pizza on the fifth floor, except all the elevators only went up to the fourth floor. So we're like, okay, where is this pizza? You know, this looks like a mall. Why is there a mall here? We're trying to get to the Vatican, for God's sake. And I had been to the Vatican before, and I know I didn't go through this. I couldn't figure out how we had wound up climbing a hill and getting into a parking garage that seemed to be part of a mall. But eventually we walked around on the fourth floor, and we found an elevator that went to five. And so we got onto that elevator, we went to five, and we got out and we started walking around, and we basically just started seeing people. And it was weird because almost all the people were, I guess the proper terminology is Afro-Italian. They were dressed in very colorful garb, and they were just sort of hanging out in this like area that sold food.
How do you know they were Italian at all?
Well, maybe they weren't Italian, but they were at Italy, so I'm assuming that they were either visiting or part of the country in one way or another.
They're all tourists from the same place, it looks like.
Well, I don't know, but you said, I think we're in a hospital, and it had that hospital feel to it, you know, kind of that that sterile look. Kind of a sad feeling too, like it wasn't very lively, so it was sort of like
or
a mall
authentic.
Yeah, it was sort of like a mall, but it was also sort of like kind of place where you hang out while people you know are sick somewhere else, and it was it just had sort of a negative feeling to it. And I was joking around, I said, well, you know, this is Italy, I'm sure I can get a beer in the hospital. And then I saw that they were selling beer. And it's like, wow, you really can get beer in a hospital cafeteria. And then we started walking around a little bit more, and we saw there was like this room filled. It must have been about 50, 60 people, all, as I call them, Afro-Italian, dressed in amazingly colorful garb, sitting on chairs, waiting. And I was like, what are they waiting for? They're waiting to get seen? Are they? Is this the emergency room? What's happening here? And then it sort of started to come to us. Even though we were on the fifth floor, this had all the feelings of a bus terminal.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, wait a minute. This isn't a hospital. This is a bus terminal. We're on the fifth floor of a parking garage, which for some reason is a bus terminal, and it attracts Afro-Italian people. And how in God's name that is leading us to the Vatican is beyond me. This is never anything I've seen before. At that point, it felt like we were in some kind of Twilight Zone episode. And we started walking down this this corridor. Actually, no, I think we wound up getting on an elevator again and going down to a different floor. We walked down this corridor, and we just saw this massive amount of people walking towards us, all of whom had a glowing red light attached to them. And I was like, Kyle, I've seen this before. This is either the Terminator, the Borg Collective, something like that. Just they will not see you. As long as you're not a threat to them, they'll just pass right through you, which is what they did. They just walked right past us, paid us no mind. And we kept walking in the other direction. And eventually we saw this light. I'm not making any of this up, by the way. We saw this light at the end of the corridor, and we started walking towards that light. And you said, there it is. And it was Vatican City. And we emerged from this weird-ass place, which I'm sure there's no evidence that it even exists. And there we were in the middle of Vatican City, right there by the Sistine Chapel and all the other things that happen in Vatican City.
It was interesting. It made you kind of respect how tourists and people from places other than, like, the local area and how we wouldn't normally enter a place like that. We just use public transit like any local would, but that's kind of what they get shuttled through when you pay for these organized things or I don't know what. But anyway, we got out of there and sort of checked it out and explored, and it was interesting to walk around and see fountains and see the basilica. And I was pointing at this building, and I said, that's the enclave building, yeah. And then it's funny, because we got back later, and I said, oh, yeah, that building, I couldn't think of the name. That's the Sistine Chapel.
Oh, I'm trying to think of the name of the other building, the big one, you know, the one where...
The Basilica.
Yeah, St. Peter's Basilica, thank you. See, we have trouble with these things.
Right.
But, you know, I don't think those people in the bus terminal slash hospital slash parking garage were tourists. Because why would they all be dressed up in the same garb? Why would they be segregated that way? There was something else going on there. And one day, I'll return to Vatican City and figure out what that was. Or actually, maybe that wasn't Vatican City. Maybe that's still Rome. Vatican City is technically its own country.
Yes.
So, and I believe it will make 10 countries that we've been to on this trip. Let me see if I can name them all. We started off landing in Ireland. In fact, we're going to wind up in Ireland.
Yes.
Right now, we're in England.
Yes.
We went to the Netherlands.
Yes.
Then we passed through Belgium. We stopped in Luxembourg. We went to Germany. We passed through Austria. We wound up in Italy. Then the next leg of our trip was France. Wait a minute. That's only 9. Oh, Vatican City. Yeah, Vatican City was in Italy.
That's 10.
So that's 10. So, 10 countries.
And then the U.S. is 11.
Then the U.S. will be 11, yes. But Italy, anything else? We tried to get in touch with Italian hackers, and it just didn't work because we used Twitter, we used email, and for whatever reason, people don't check these things. And would have been nice to visit. Italian hackers are awesome, but we were only there for a couple of days, and it didn't quite work out. We'll come back. We'll bring calendars or something.
It was amazing for me. I'd never been to Italy, so just to check it out and get a feel of it, especially when a lot of people are gone. And I don't know, it's just an interesting time to be there. Sort of touristy, but at the same time, like, eye-opening in your own ways. If you don't kind of go that route, it's still got its own authenticity. But we made the effort, and as with restaurants and stuff, it's you know, that time of year, nobody's really around. They kind of go elsewhere, go on their vacation, and try to stay cool and relax as much as you are. As much as we're traveling, other people are too.
Yeah.
So, but it still felt like worthwhile, and I got some beautiful, beautiful photos and stuff of the city and some of the piazzas and notable things.
A piazza is basically just like a plaza, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and we've walked from one to the other. And for some reason, in Rome, I usually get lost very easily, but in Rome I was able to find myself, you know, and know where to go and recognize places and get back to where I started from. And that's, you know, it's not a grid. It's pretty complex, in fact. But there's something about it. I'd only been there once before, really, but there's something about it that I'm able to sort of sync with. So that was kind of cool right there. We went to as many different places as we could, food-wise and just coffee-wise and things like that. But eventually it was time to move on. Actually, after only a couple of days, it was time to move on. We tried to book an overnight ticket to Paris. Oh, wow. Remember trying to get that ticket? We had to wait. I don't know what it is. There's certain things about certain countries where you have to just wait forever to do something. You tried to mail a postcard.
Oh my gosh. They have the same system.
Yeah, you have to take a number and you wait.
Yeah, it's like this ticket that has a number, and then they have like an electronic sign that flashes different numbers as they help different patrons. And that was really irritating.
Well, we
must have spent
an
hour or two waiting for the train people, which then shouted at us.
The post office, we couldn't figure out which button you were supposed to press.
Right.
And every button you press, you got a different letter in front of the number.
There were like four different categories.
So you had to basically, we took one of each. So.
Right.
But it didn't help because we still had to wait a long period of time. And then people are going to the post office, getting into big arguments. And I, you know, just like with trains, I don't know what people are arguing about. You know, you either buy postage or do whatever. Just get on with it and let's move to the next person. But it doesn't work that way. So yeah, you got to wait forever. And the post office is at the train station too, so you can just wait there all day long. Earlier we had tried to get train tickets to Paris. We want to take the overnight train. And as you said, the guy yelled at us. Well, eventually we got a guy to yell at us. It took a long time to get that far. He said that train is full. All full. Full for a long, long time. And yeah, you know, this is part of the different camps here. People who book everything in advance, like weeks, months in advance. What kind of car is that? That's a nice car.
Bentley Vantage.
I never heard of that before.
Convertible.
Wow. Really cool. And a weird license plate, too. So, yeah, we don't do that. We basically, we're flexible, so sometimes that means we don't get what we want and we have to get something else. In this particular case, we didn't get what we wanted because that train was sold out, so we had to... this guy, you know, he yelled at us, but he also helped us. He booked us on a train to Milan, and from there, a train from Milan to Paris, which he described as a sleeper. And I was trying to figure out what he meant by that, because he said that it was one of these compartments that fit six people. And I couldn't figure out how you could get six people to sleep in the same compartment, because basically there's two seats facing each other. So I was a little apprehensive about that. But we agreed to it. We said, okay, you know, this is the train we're going to take, and we'll make our way to Paris. And worst comes to worst, we won't get any sleep, but it'll be an overnight train, and we'll get there.
Yeah, so after about an hour, hour and a half, we got out of there with our tickets. And it was a success because it was something, things being so booked up and everyone trying to get out of Rome. The next day...
Everyone's always trying to get out of Rome. Everyone's always trying to get out of some city. The thing is, trains are so popular that they sell out constantly. And there are so many trains in so many countries, but they're very, very booked. They're very popular, and they're always adding more and expanding. It's just something that we really need to learn in our country. I've been saying this for years, and we never seem to really make progress. But you can't go wrong investing in trains, because people really do use them.
Yeah, it is something that is used. So the next day we ended up hopping on our train and getting getting connected in Milan, and then moving on to.
Well, you're about to pass out, so we're going to stop here.
Somewhere.
Yeah. Let me just say, we did it right. We left the city right because we wound up going to the... We had walked around for pretty much the whole day.
Oh, yeah, Paris.
Yeah. We're still in Rome, though. We had walked around pretty much the whole day, looking at piazzas and the Colosseum, which was wrecked, ruined, totally... They didn't take care of it. And that doesn't sound like British. And so we basically wound up going to the post office. That was the last thing we did. And we had planned on going to that amazing Italian place. Every place is an Italian place in Rome. It's an amazing place across from where we were staying, where we had left all our bags, not at the Italian place, at the hotel we were staying at. So we timed it so that right after you got your postage, we'd walk over there, we'd have an early dinner at this amazing place, then afterwards we'd walk across the street, get our bags, and then walk to the train station, which was very, very close. And we did all of this. We had an amazing dinner. We got our bags, which was stored at no charge, in a room. You know, of course you trust the people there. They don't take your name or anything like that. It's just, yeah, we'll keep it safe here. They give you the combo. You can come and get it. And that's what we did. We got it, walked to the train station, got on the train, and had 5 minutes to spare before the train left. And that's how you travel.
Yeah. And I was really thrilled because the post office thing there was a bit of a drag. Same number system kind of thing. And I had to wait and wait and wait. And there was like 4 different numbers you get. And I ended up seeing the supervisor and just told her, yeah, I want to send this postcard. And she just had me pay and I was done with that, and we were able to make the train that we wanted to get, which was incredibly fast.
That was a nice train. It was another Eurostar.
Yes.
And that had Wi-Fi. Oh, my God. That had Wi-Fi that you basically... I can't figure out the catch yet. You had to give it a credit card number, and they charged you a penny, 1 euro penny, and that was it. And, okay, so I give them an email address. I guess I'm going to get some spam from them. But I'm only paying a penny, and I had great Wi-Fi. You had great Wi-Fi, too, for the whole train ride. We got a lot of work done. And sure, that's the kind of scam I can buy into. I don't think anything else will be charged to my card, but I'll keep an eye out in case it is. But it's run by the train company.
Yeah, it was really nice to get connectivity, and I don't know, I felt taken care of.
Well, let's leave it there, because we've been sitting here at this pub outside on a Monday night? Is this Monday? Monday night in London?
Yes.
And we have it?
It's rush hour, people.
Well,
I mean,
it's not still rush hour. It's like evening now.
I know. We should really get some nourishment.
All right.
Beer is not something man can live on alone.
Oh, I don't know about that. But yeah, okay. I guess we can maybe mix it up with something else.
What's more is we have to catch a train, don't we?
We have to catch a train.
Yes, we're still moving.
Right, hang on. Let me look at the ticket here. Had a bit of an adventure getting this ticket, but I'll get into that some other time. Our train leaves at 21:10, which in American is 10 minutes after 9 p.m. And it's currently, hang on, my phone. It's currently 18:56, which is 6:56 p.m. So we have about 2 hours. Now, what I suggest is that one of us walk around the neighborhood a little bit and find a good place for us to have food. And the other watches all the bags here at the pub, and then we'll do that. We'll take our bags over there, have something, walk to the train station, and then get on a train up to Liverpool. And then we'll continue this story at some point, somewhere. But where we're leaving it now, it gets kind of complicated because we're in London, about to go to Liverpool, but our story is basically on it. Leaving Rome on our way to Paris, and it's a whole train story to tell, but we'll get to that.
Yes, we will. Until then.
Until then, what?
You're listening to WUSB.
Stony Brook. Should we record now?
Can't believe you would say that.
It never gets old. Thank you.
Hey kids, Finn with you. Finn's Revolution until 9 p.m. right here on WUSB Stony Brook. We're going to be talking to the cast and crew, so to speak, of Spark Boom, this great, great arts event in Huntington happening this weekend and throughout the summer. Also, very shortly, Rachel Taylor Brown right here on WUSB Stony Brook. Finn's Revolution, baby.
Another teary eyeline. What a drive.